Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Poolside Pass podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by Coach Ash Morris, who's head coach out at Hamilton Aquatics in Dubai. We're going to be speaking to Ash about what it's like coaching swimmers of all nationalities in his program, as well as just his general thoughts on coaching swimmers from age group level up through to junior international. Before we get into the interview with Ash, just a quick word from our sponsors at Youth Sport Nutrition. Youth Sport Nutrition do tons of work within swimming, partnering with over 15 clubs in the UK and offer free partnership to coaches who reach out. They also sponsor some of the top youth swimmers nationally. They designed Protein, the world's first fortified all-in-one recovery shake specifically for youth athletes. Protein contains a wholesome blend of protein, fats, carbs, and 16 essential micronutrients. These include key nutrients such as calcium, vitamin D, and iron. Their products are also all approved by Inform Sport, which is a requirement for all professional athletes by WADA. Protein is designed to double up as a recovery shake or meal replacement to support busy athletes whenever whole foods aren't available, typically after early morning or late night training. Just shake it up and go. You can buy Protein today with an exclusive 10% discount from your first order using our Poolside Pass code POOL10 when checking out online. All first kilogram orders come with a free shaker, scoop, small t-shirt, stickers and a Food First digital nutrition guide. Don't like it? Then send it back for a free replacement or your money back guaranteed. You can also access their free app today. Just search YSN Kitchen on the Apple App Store or Google Play. Be sure to check out their website today at www.usportnutrition.co.uk. Okay, so I think it's about time we introduce Ash. Ash, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, not bad, thanks. Why don't we just start with you giving yourself, giving us a little bit of background of you in the sport, really.
So I'm currently the director of swimming at Hamilton Aquatics. Been here for, this is my 11th season, although not going to plan currently. I started off as a very average swimmer, made a couple of nationals, nothing to kind of get excited about as a swimmer. Swam under Tim Westlake at City of Cambridge and then Sasha Jerfy at City of Peterborough. I got into coaching because I was sick of swimming, basically, and I think it was at the next stage of my development to start kind of commit, and I wasn't prepared to commit as a swimmer. So I literally got out when I was 16 of one of the sessions, asked Sasha if I could help him coach, and he said yeah, and he thought it was coming for a couple of months, so that was interesting. And I just started volunteer coaching a really small club called Huntingdon Piranhas in Cambridgeshire. Did that for, I think, around 6 months. They paid for my courses and things like that. We got to a guy who'd been doing it for 20 years, a guy called Steve. And we got to the AGM by November, and the committee, for some reason, decided us to be voted in as joint head coach, to which he said, you know what, I've had my time, pass it over to Ash. So I was kind of 17 years old, a little bit cocky, and didn't really know what I was doing at that point. So I kind of made it up as I went along, made a lot of my mistakes as a 17, 18-year-old coach in a volunteer club, which I guess you can get away with when you volunteer and when you're young. And it kind of went from there. Went on to assist, I think you know her, Vicky Metcalf.
No, yes, Vicky Simpson. Yeah, big mentor of mine.
Yeah, so she was great with me. She really took a punt on me, and I started helping her at Biggleswade with mid-bed swim squads. We had some real good success with some younger kids there. And it kind of went from there. And in 2009, my boss now, Chris, he approached me about coming across to Dubai, which originally was a two-year plan. And 10 and a half years later, it's been a little bit longer.
So obviously now you're in Dubai working with swimmers from like all over the world. What considerations do you need to make in terms of working with athletes from different countries?
So the biggest thing working with different nationalities is the communication and the variations of swimmer. Now, language is not a big problem. Like a lot of our kids go to British or international schools here. The biggest thing is having, you know, some countries have nationals halfway through a season and like a normal season, what we'd have in the UK. So trying to accommodate those swimmers is a real, real challenge. Sometimes you just have to wing it. Sometimes you have to plan for that athlete, depending on the priority of that athlete as well. But it can be really, really tricky, and especially balancing emotions. You know, when you've got swimmers preparing for one of their main competitions halfway through a season, effectively, they're kind of on their own on some elements, although you can integrate them with the rest of the team for a lot of their training. A lot of the time, it's very individual, which is why, even with my squad, I've only got 15 guys in my top squad, but we need six lanes just because sometimes we've got, you know, versatile events as well as competition preparation.
Yeah. And I guess it just goes back to the importance of being able to individualize your program for each swimmer. And there's no one size fits all, especially in the situation that you're in.
Yeah, I agree. And a lot of the kids, you know, they're really academic here, and not just academic intelligence, they're very emotionally intelligent, and they know if they're not feeling the love, and you've really got to make sure you hone in on that and make sure they feel valued and prioritize them, and at least they feel that way, then they'll swim fast.
Yeah, absolutely. So Hamilton Aquatics is, well, from the outside looking in, it seems like a very, very big program. What are some of the challenges you face that come with that?
So, yeah, Hamilton, when I started 10 and a half years ago, Chris Tidy, who owns the club, he had set it up in 2007. He was a very successful coach himself. He's coached double European champion, Olympic finalist, fellow Mr. Panovich. And he wanted someone to come out and look after the squad program and the club side of things, while he could grow the business and continue to coach his older guys. Since then, we've kind of grown. We've got 100 total staff at the moment, including teaching staff, admin staff. So it's a massive program. And managing that, even though I've only got a small team of coaches, 12 coaches, can be difficult, especially with the communication side of things. We have 5,000 learn to swim and 1,000 in squads right now.
Oh, so wow.
Across 30 pools, which are predominantly school programs. So it's very, very different to the UK. We take second place to any of the school activities, understandably, in their pool. So if there's a school gala on or the school need their pool, we literally just have to cancel training. But luckily enough, we have alternative programs and venues. So I'd say weekly, sometimes daily, there's different challenges and different things which get thrown your way, which you just learn to kind of solve the problems. And swimming's not a big sport here in terms of the elite side of things, but participation at a young end, you know, every school has a swimming pool here. Obviously, you've got the sea. A lot of people are lucky to have swimming pools in their villas or in their apartment compounds. So it's really, really important kids learn to swim here. And that's kind of our advantage in a squad program, because kids kind of get lured into the sport. And obviously in the summer months here, it's very, very hot for kids to just go around outside on their bikes or to play football. So a good alternative for them is to cool down in the pool. So we've really taken advantage of that from a participation level, and then tried to do the right thing with our structure to allow kind of kids who want to perform at a higher level to progress through.
Yeah. So let's talk about you now as a coach. I imagine the majority of your work is in that kind of crossover period between like a youth age group swimmer and a senior elite kind of swimmer. Let's just talk a little bit more about kind of what you do within your work.
Yeah, so on a day-to-day basis, I have, you know, 15 swimmers who are kind of age 15 and above, that older junior kind of age group. And I just see my role, as well as overseeing the program, is just transferring these kids to be able to perform in a university or a senior swimming environment. I know sometimes coaches' egos get in the way, but I really feel as like a junior coach, like our responsibility is to make sure those kids continue to improve when they leave our program, and they leave our program with good values, good people skills, because that's what kind of makes you proud as a coach when you look back. We had a Zoom call with four of my swimmers who had coached for over 10 years who are now at universities last night, and they gave so much back to our younger kids, and it's that kind of stuff, as well as, you know, big swims at high level meets, which really does make you proud. And A lot of the kind of cliche things we kind of implement on a day-to-day basis, it makes it worthwhile because it really kind of shone through last night, especially.
So you talk about the importance of making sure that when your swimmers leave your program, they can still kind of continue to improve at other programs. What would you say are some of the key things to ensuring that can happen?
So like a lot of our swimmers go off to the USA. I think it's a great opportunity for them. Obviously it's not for everybody, definitely not. But I just think the opportunity to swim and study hand in hand is a really real advantage for some kids, not to mention a scholarship opportunities for some families as well. So obviously that takes us right back to, you know, basic kind of short course swimming skills and things like that. So right from a young age in our program, we've implemented stages where, you know, for the younger guys, they're working on basic breath hold skills, dolphin kick, underwaters, challenges, different stimulus, all the way through to my group, which obviously is a little bit more challenging. And I think one thing I'm kind of proud of, we really prioritize short course season every year. So up until around December, we really hone in on short course swimming, and we usually have kind of a half rested meet in the short course window. And I think the kids get a lot out of that in terms of actually having a bit of a focus and a bit of a goal to commit to their underwater skills and their turn skills. And we try our best to transfer that into the long course season. Some better than others, obviously. But I think they're the kind of things which we really, really focus on. But I think even simple things, I know the Zoom sessions right now have really, really helped, but, you know, educating kids on life skills. Dubai as a place is a little bit different to like the UK. The kids aren't as streetwise. And we kind of have to do certain things on our team trips when we take them overseas, just to help them a little bit understand the bigger world, not just swimming, but kind of outside of everything. You know, kids out here don't cross roads, for example. You know, it's too hot to walk everywhere in the summer. So, you know, they're getting lifts, they're getting taxis, they're getting public transport to places, and they often don't have to cross a road. So it's really, really basic things which you take for granted in the UK. Even, you know, we had a team trip, I mean, 5-6 years ago, we took kids to the Norwich meet at Easter. And one of the Egyptian boys had never seen a bunny rabbit. So he was amazed what it was, you know. So it's kind of these small little things which in Dubai, you're wrapped up in a little bit of a bubble. It's a very artificial place. It's an amazing place, don't get me wrong. But we've got to give these kids little bits of exposure as we go along to just set them up so that they can succeed and carry on in the pool as well as out of the pool.
I can imagine from not having to cross roads on a daily basis to then when you go to a meet perhaps in Sheffield at Ponds Forge and having to come out of the pool there, cross a road, then cross a tram line, and then cross a road to get to the other side again can be quite a big difference.
Yeah, and a bit of a responsibility for the coaching team as well. You know, you've got 60 kids to look after and 5 or 6 coaches. You know, we want to make sure the kids are safe. And we've had some good experiences over the years.
You spoke just then about making sure, trying to transfer all the skills you work on short course through to long course. In your experience, are there any things there that are more difficult to transfer to long course, or are there any things that you think people could do better to ensure people transfer things better through to a long course season?
Yeah, I think short course swimming and long course swimming are very, very different, almost like swimming sports. You get some real short course legends. You look at the World Cup circuits who aren't always able to transfer to long course for various reasons. Now, I think as long as swimmers are fit, are efficient, they generally can perform in both pools. You can generally get away with less efficient strokes in a short course pool to a certain level. And often you see the kids and obviously senior swimmers with amazing underwater skills and turn skills who really take advantage and exploit people with that. But I think the key with long course swimming, you know, you've got to be tactically aware and you've got to be really, really efficient because you just don't get away with it in a 50 meter pool.
So, Kind of just moving on slightly, but still talking about training programs and making sure things are transferable through the whole summer's career. What do you think is the most underappreciated component within a training program? Like, people don't get enough of it, or people just pay lip service to it and something like that?
Yeah, I think coaches around the world, multi-sports, like to throw the buzzwords of technique and skills around. But I think implementing it is a very, very different thing. Again, something we're really proud that we do believe we deliver here at Hamilton. All the way through the program, you've got to be planning certain skill progressions. You've got to be implementing it on a daily basis. A lot of our technical progressions will start very, very basic. And as we progress into race situations and race process swims, that's where the transfer obviously comes in. I think you've got to hold your swimmers accountable to it. And I don't know if enough people do. I think people like to say count your strokes, but don't necessarily hold their swimmers accountable for that. But more importantly with that, you've got to create a culture which swimmers hold themselves accountable for, because it's impossible. You're not Superman chasing around. Sometimes people have got 30 swimmers in a pool. You can't be counting everyone's strokes. It's impossible. You've got to make sure they take ownership of, you know, holding X strokes per length, 5 dolphin kicks every wall, and whatever other basic things you want to implement. So I think that's really, really imperative. I think it has to be planned within your structure. So as I mentioned before, our development pathway, Stu Sant leads that, and he ensures that they're delivering certain things within our younger kids, kind of our 8 to 11-year-olds. Real basic things in terms of their test sets, whether it's pushing glides, whether it's 15 meters underwaters, whether it's kick test sets, things like that. Stroke efficiency sets. We have, you know, weekly coaches meetings on topics like that, and how to implement that. And as it progresses through, I like the old Wayne Goldsmith stuff he posts about teaching a skill, perfecting a skill, and then holding a skill or a technique as you go faster or as you go for a longer repetition, and then putting it under pressure or in a fatigue situation. I think ultimately it's pretty easy to teach a skill and perfect a skill, but then to hold a skill, that's when it's at its true test, whether it's in a race situation or whether it's in a tough set. If you can hold a stroke count or an underwater skill or a turn component under pressure or under fatigue, that's when you know it's a permanent habit. So that's where we kind of observe and measure whether we're doing a good job as a program. And obviously when they get into my group, which is a small group, they kind of need to have those skills or at least be able to perform those skills when required.
So you mentioned there making sure that swimmers can do the basics well and can progress the basics well. What would you like, what top three things would you class as basic things that swimmers need to really, really be focusing on?
Real young kids, simple things, streamlining, body position stuff. So we get all that right. We don't really encourage kickboards from our top end of our learn to swim program through to the younger part of our squads. We like kids to be able to streamline, whether it's for 10 meters, whether it's for a whole 25. We encourage a lot of backstroke kicking because I believe the transfer there with the land work and your core into backstroke kicking has a real transfer. So there are a few basic things we like to do well. We like to do a lot of the speed components in a fun kind of environment. So often that can be starts, turns, relays. And the relays don't have to be, you know, 50 freestyle. It can be dive in, turn, after 5 meters, come back to the wall. So all the time they're practicing somersaults and roly-polies in the pool. So trying to get those little things done really, really well. And as they come through the age group program, certainly through the performance pathway, again, like to be able to do simple 1 or 2 sessions a week in the threshold situation where they can go off times and hold stroke count and continue to do dolphin kicks off the wall under pressure. And when they're tired, and you know, some kids don't always find it easy to maintain stroke technique in that situation, you know. So I think they're real basic things we like to implement. All of our kids throughout every single stage of our squad structure have a good kick base. So even from our learn to swim program, they're kicking from like stage 4 really, really well. all the way through up to my group, you know, who'll do early season, you know, two and a half K kick sets a week before we go into the later part of the season, where they might do one big kick set and two short speed kick sets. So kick's a massive, massive thing. I really don't believe there are many swimmers out there without a fantastic kick, and at least a robust kick, which has some sort of transfer into body position or performance.
So I just made a few notes there, and I think one thing that I'm fully wholeheartedly behind is having a real big kick base. I think that it's never too early to start building up a kick base within a swimmer. And like you say, that there's no swimmer at the top level that can't kick. You don't see any elite 200 meter freestyle swimmer, even a 1500 swimmer that can't kick. So I think developing a really strong kick is, like you say, a real basic and really important. Just another thing I just thought of. You said you've got 12 coaches across your program. How do you, as a head coach, ensure that each and every one of those 12 coaches are ensuring that they get better at their job all the time?
One of the advantages of being here, and I mentioned some disadvantages earlier, one of the advantages here is we do have full-time staff, so every single person we recruit. So to start with, we get our recruiting strategy done reasonably well now. We've made some mistakes in the past where we've gone maybe more for technical coaches than like character and people who really want to learn. So now I believe we've got a really good team of people who buy into our philosophy, who want to learn, who want to improve. So what happens now, we've got five development coaches in our development pathway who have a venue each with a couple of groups, and head coach Stuart Sant, he oversees those five development coaches. So he's very, very on top of what they're delivering. We like people to have their own identity in their own coaching, because we don't want them to be coming, leaving our program as coaches kind of with one mindset and one way, which is kind of our way. We want them to experiment as coaches as well within, obviously, our framework and philosophy. So we map out the framework. We mention what the priorities are as a program. And then it's up to them to kind of find creative ways to deliver that. And Stu does obviously cycle meetings with them as groups. He has regular one-to-one meetings with each of the coaches. And then from there, Stu cherry picks the best kids to go into his youngest performance junior group. Some really amazing young kids we've got now as a product of that. The kids who aren't quite there, we do have another pathway, which still, you know, kids who are 11, 12 years old are still getting available 7 sessions a week. Most of them do 4 or 5 sessions. So there's still a good group of kids who we haven't written off, and we're still given an opportunity to there. So from that aspect, it's not perfectly maintained, but I think we've got good hands on it. And Stu and myself, whenever we can, for example, if I've given my guys one of the evenings off, I'll try and go and visit one of the venues, one of the younger kids' venues, so we can give a little bit of feedback to the coaches, so that when we do give feedback, we actually know what's going on as well, because I've made that mistake before where given feedback of what I think was happening rather than what is actually happening. So really, really important we actually see what's happening. And we always make ourselves available for kind of our younger, like, development level galas as well. So we'll always kind of make an appearance just to show a little bit of support to the coaches, but also to see what's being delivered in terms of the product.
Oh, wow. That sounds like there's a great support structure in place for coaches, making sure that they're able to improve themselves, and they've got like mentors that sit above them and help them through the program. So that's really, really nice to hear about. Just as we finish off now, I just want to ask you for your kind of three tips working with diverse groups. I'm aware that there's a lot of coaches that may work with diverse groups that listen to this podcast, or perhaps don't, but may go on to in the future work with quite diverse groups. So what are your three tips for doing that?
Yeah, I think even if you don't have swimmers who are racing at different international meets or different nationals, you can maybe relate it to a lot of coaches out there have programs which might have different age groups in their top squad. For example, you might have an exceptional 12-year-old with a a 19-year-old who's on his way out. You never know. So I think there's a lot of different situations out there. But my three things are planning, communicating, and adaptability, all of which I have absolutely failed to do numerous times. And when I have got it right, it's worked really, really well. And I think linking all three things with that to be as proactive as possible, you have to plan, but you also have to be able to wing it at certain points, which is where the adaptability comes in. You have to be able to deal with things on a day-to-day basis, not let affect your coaching, find solutions for the swimmers and yourself. And you have to be proactive with the communication. You know, we try and have once or twice a year parents meetings where everybody's invited with a presentation to explain what's going on. Things like the competition plan for the next year going out, you know, before summer, so the parents can manage holidays or school trips or anything like that. Being available. I know modern coaches are very approachable, are being encouraged to be approachable, but I think there is a bit of an old school mentality of turning your phone off at 7 o'clock, or parents have to book meetings. And I just think it's putting up a brick wall for some coaches, and it's not actually making their jobs easier. I think you've got to be as approachable as possible. By all means, I do not get it right all the time, but I think most of our parents, even parents not in my squad, believe they can at least pick up a phone to me or send me an email or a WhatsApp. And more often than not, I'm happy to meet them for a coffee or whatever's needed, you know, just to, I think sometimes people just want to be heard. So if you're approachable and you communicate effectively, I think people feel valued and they feel like they're part of the journey. And I think you have less problems that way.
Absolutely. I think I've said in a previous episode that, you know, I view parents as a key facilitator, and not, I think a lot of coaches might view parents sometimes as a bit of a barrier. I think if you view them as a facilitator and people that you can work with, and if you communicate effectively with them, your job gets 10 times easier. I think if you shut yourself off to them, I think you're always going to be fighting a lot of resistance.
Yeah, and I think ultimately as well, if you're not educating your parents and you're not inspiring your own swimmers, you are failing as a coach, because ultimately that's all you've got to do as a coach. And if you're proactive with doing those things, your kids want to come to your training sessions, they're motivated, they want to win, they want to give their best for you as a coach as well as a program. And parents will be on board with it if you're proactive with communicating everything. And if they know that your best interests are for their child, then everybody's a winner.
Absolutely. Ash, thank you so much for your time. It's been great to catch up with you and discuss the multitude of things we discussed today. Listeners, thank you for tuning in again. If you like what you heard, make sure you check out all our other episodes, which are available online. We've got a brand new website, www.poolsidepass.com. Also, get in touch with us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at The Poolside Pass. And most importantly, share the podcast. The more coaches hear this podcast, hopefully the more coaches can learn from the content that we're putting out. So thank you for listening. Until next time, stay safe and try, in whatever way you can, keep coaching, even if it is remote. Thank you.
Thank you.